to the Jim K. Ford Sens Nation podcast with Steve Warren and the coach, Greg Kennedy.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of the Jim K. Ford Sens Nation podcast. It is Steve and Greg once again, and we got lots to get to today as the Sens start to wind things down. Final home game coming up on Saturday night as the Sens take on their beloved rivals, the Montreal Canadiens. So it will be kind of a home game. So much red, white, and blue when the Habs visit. But we'll talk about that and a lot of other issues going on with the Ottawa Senators right now. Greg, I got to say, right out of the gate,
yes.
Doing this, of course, as we always do, by way of computer. And there you are wearing an LA Kings T-shirt. And it reminds me that everyone's, you know, it seems like every couple of weeks something new comes up where you and I have something in common. It's an LA Kings, what is that, Butch Goring from the 1971-72 Opeachy set, right?
Or is it 71-72 or 72-73? Either way, yes. It is Robert Thomas, Butch Goring. It's his card on the front of my purple T-shirt. I love me solid Goring.
Yeah, that for those of a certain vintage who remember Ken Dryden, the Montreal Canadiens great goalie of the 70s dynasty, that is his rookie card year, and that is, I think, a favorite hockey card all time for a lot of people. And anyways, that's a very cool T-shirt. I might make one out of the Ken Dryden T-shirt. That's what I'm going to do. How about that? Yeah.
Go for
How
it.
How about that? Yeah, let's launch in, though. We got lots to get to today. And well, we'll start it out with this. Tim Stützle looks like he's not going to suit up for the game against the Montreal Canadiens for the home finale. I guess when Tim Stützle is missing Tim Stützle bobblehead night and fan appreciation night, it shouldn't come as a huge surprise that a couple of games later, he's not going to be around for the home finale. And at this stage, Greg, you got to just shut him down, right?
Exactly. Yeah. We don't know what's exactly is wrong with him or have they actually said anything, but you and I had speculated before that he seemed to be wearing an awful lot of that funky tape stuff on the back there on his neck a lot earlier in the year. There's obviously something more serious is wrong. And at this stage, hey, you can play hurt if you have to, but it's not the Ottawa Senator meaningful games. So it's okay that they shut him down early and let him get some rest.
Yeah, I'd say so. And the only concern is that it's something, you know, serious. Didn't sound like it. It sounded like it was day-to-day all along, but who knows? Who knows with this team and its history of shoulder injuries, for example? This was a carryover from the first Florida game. The Sens lost a couple to Florida here in the last, I don't know, couple of weeks. And in the first game, Nico Mikkola basically got him kind of from behind. It was, I don't know if I'd call it a hit to get angry about, but I didn't love it either. It was kind of from behind. You know, Ridley Gregg didn't love it because he ended up in the next game really going into the boards hard against Mikkola, big hit, and then they dropped the gloves after. I was a little disappointed that, you know, Ridley Gregg is the guy that's being sent in there to take on a guy who's, I don't know, 6'4", something like that. He's not a fighter per se, but that was a big size mismatch on a night where you had Imama in the lineup. You had Zach McEwen in the lineup, Brady Tkachuk. I thought maybe there's a better choice there than Ridley Gregg.
Well, Ridley Gregg's the kind of guy. He's a team guy. He's going to step up and represent and get some payback for his teammate. That it makes sense that that Ridley Gregg would be on the list of players because there aren't really, you know, you went through the three or four. How many other guys do you think might have been the type that would have stepped up? I don't know that there's all that many in this roster that would have done too much in that situation besides Ridley Gregg and the three or four guys you mentioned.
I really want some more toughness on this team. I don't necessarily need you out there actually fighting, but being capable of fighting, winning more battles. Like, as I'm watching the Tampa Bay game, which was a nice victory by the Sens, by the way, a nice 3-2 overtime or shootout win. I'm looking at a guy like Kucherov, right? He's obviously an MVP candidate, but he's not the biggest guy in the NHL. And yet every 50-50 battle, he's in there winning them. And I see a lot of these Sens skill guys that go into these 50-50 battles And let's be honest, that how those things go in the course of a game, the many 50-50 battles in the course of a game, they dictate possession. And the Sens skill guys, in my opinion, they lose way too many of them. Would you agree?
I would agree. Yeah. And this is the type of player, the qualities that the rumor mill has talked about, and actually Steve Staios on record is talking about. He used the term pros. He's looking for a pros pro. And that's the type of guy that he's talking about. A guy that plays a 200-foot game, a guy that understands the physical side of the game. This team doesn't necessarily have a lot of big barrel-chested, broad-shouldered, strong-looking men, you know. All the skill guys are slight or slim, or, you know, even the ones that are taller aren't exactly broader outside of, you know, Giroux's a big man. Obviously, Brady Tkachuk is a big man, but outside of those two, like, who is tall but thick? You don't have it. You know, Tanner Kleven, I guess, but Shabon is tall but thin. Sanderson is tall but thinner. You know, Stützle is not big and broad. Even our good buddy Drake is a bigger man than the rest of them, but he's not thick. So there's just not that. That's the one missing element. And it's the point that you've made ad nauseum, right? Too much of the same type of player and not enough of a different type of player that this team is missing. And I look forward to seeing what kind of players, or not know what kind, I look forward to seeing who it is that Steve Staios ends up targeting and ends up hopefully signing or acquiring a trade in the offseason, who's going to fit that role.
Yeah, and I think being able to fight, even if you never do, I think that really lends itself to winning those types of battles or making life difficult for the other team in front of your own net, for example. We were talking about this off the air, it's the same reason people take martial arts. They don't take it because they want to go out and beat up people. They want to feel confidence. They want to feel like they can be assertive in every situation because they can handle themselves if things unravel and fall apart and you do have to get into it. I think that when a guy can fight, even though maybe he doesn't, you know, like on that defense, on that blue line, nobody can fight. Or at least maybe if they can fight, they don't. And Tyler Kleven, that's another reason why, you know, he might be a good asset moving forward. But I just like to see guys who, you know, play that game with a physical brand of hockey and be able to take care of themselves when the need arises, because I don't think you're going to be assertive enough in most situations. You're going to kind of defer a little bit because, like, oh, that guy's a buzzsaw. I don't want any part of that guy. Mm-hmm. So a few more of those guys are really going to help, I think, with this team.
Because right now, the guys that you look upon who are going to be that type of player, unfortunately, that list probably includes Parker Kelly and the aforementioned Ridley Gregg, and neither of them is a big, strong guy. Our buddy Mark Kastelic is certainly a big, strong guy, but I think he would fight, you know, and he has shown that he will fight, and he can contribute a little bit on the ice. He's been playing much, much, much better lately, but just more of them. And even if it were just, even if some of the guys in the lineup added that dimension to their game, they're just, whoa, you know, look out. This guy's got a different feel or a different look to him. Come back to training camp next season, and this guy's just bulked up a little bit, and he's playing with a little more edge now. You know, that I'd be happy if two or three of them develop that into their game.
Before we move on, did you reference Giroux as a big man?
You know, what is he, 5'11"? 6 foot?
I got him probably about 5'10".
Oh, really?
Not that. He's good size. He works out.
Yeah, he's broader. He is more of the, yeah, you're right. He would not be considered tall, but he's not.
No.
Like Stützle, Stützle's thin, right? Like Stützle's tallish and thin and slim. And Shabbat, that body type, where Giroux at least looks broader, thicker, stronger, right? I guess is what I'm looking for.
Attention truck enthusiasts, are you ready to experience the power, performance, and innovation of a legendary vehicle? Look no further than the 2023 Ford F-150 at Jim K. Ford. We have incredible deals and financing options tailored just for you. Visit Jim K. Ford today and experience the thrill of driving the best-selling truck in Canada, the 2023 Ford F-150. Visit us at 1438 Uville Drive in Orleans or at jimkford.com.
At Jim K. Ford Lincoln, we say yes!
Hey, if you like a nice drink with family and friends, I'd like to recommend a nice bottle of Beaver's Dram Premium Canadian Whiskey. Imagine a nice whiskey with less bite and more flavor that's soft and warm with subtle flavors of orange and dark chocolate and a hint of sherry in there too. Pick up a bottle of Seven Seals Beaver's Dram Premium Canadian Whiskey today at the LCBO or order online at DunRobinDistilleries.com. Jacques Martin is down to his final days as a head coach in the National Hockey League. And has it been a good experiment? Or should the Sens maybe, when DJ Smith got fired, should they have waited until they had somebody that that can come in and be the coach for the long term? What have you thought of Jacques Martin taking over here since, I guess it was December, if memory serves, that DJ Smith got fired? What did you think of the of Jacques Martin's performance and the decision to go with not even an interim coach, but a temporary one?
Well, I understand the whole interim idea, right? We're pretty much convinced that the reason that they did it this way is because whoever it is that they're interested in hiring, or probably at least the top two or three candidates, are currently employed. So whoever they wanted, or even if they wanted to wait and see if somebody else becomes available, these guys were not available at the time. So they had to go the interim route rather than hiring somebody and sort of being locked in and then, oh darn, look who's available now. So I understand why they went that way, and making it Jacques makes sense from the point of view of, he's a guy in the organization. He's going to presumably continue in the organization afterwards. So in that sense, here's a guy who can go in. He's familiar with the players. We know who he is and what he is and what he can bring. We know he can be demanding of these players. We know he can teach them what they need to learn. And he gets to observe everything up close and personal and report back. And he's just a much more educated voice in the room with the rest of the upper echelon management team when they're discussing players, when they're discussing positioning, when they're discussing contracts, whatever. He's got that much more information than the rest of them. So I get it, why it was him and how it turned out that way. And as to whether it's been a success or not, you can't judge it on the record. I don't think that's fair, because he's the talent as a group is not, the lineup is, the roster's construction is not correct. We can all agree on that. And it just proves the point. But he can now try to work with some of those players so that we can determine whether this guy is ever going to get to where we want him to get to, right? That's the thing we've talked about too, is this, are these guys actually able to change their games and become better players? And I think now that he's been in there and in the room and on the ice and working with them and on the bench, his opinion carries a lot of weight now in those conversations about constructing the roster moving forward.
So is his dialogue now with Steve Staios, now that we know that Jacques, he's probably going to stay with the organization and he's going to give a full report of what he saw and has been over these many months. Like, is Jacques Martin, given that he's staying in the organization, he's no longer the coach, he's had an objective view of the players, the strengths and weaknesses of each, is his report any different at the end of the season now than DJ Smith's would have been as he finishes up? Like, let's say that he didn't get fired, he finished out the year this year, and then Steve Staios said, okay, give me the lowdown on the season that was and tell me about these players. Is there any difference between what Jacques Martin is reporting and what DJ Smith would have reported?
I would say yes. It has to be different, because obviously whatever DJ was reporting, either the message wasn't getting through or they were choosing not to act on it. DJ obviously had a different MO. DJ obviously had a different list of priorities as to what was important, what he felt were the qualities that he needed to bring out in these players. And it's now been identified, the qualities that these players do not have as far as on the ice, professionalism and playing both ends of the ice and away from the puck and yada, yada, that long list. So yeah, I think Jacques's answers will be much different. And also there's probably the point that DJ, well, every coach, he would have played favorites. DJ would have been reticent about giving negative reports on certain players because he really likes that guy. He likes this kid. Jacques had no favorites going in, probably has favorites now, but Jacques' list of favorites and the qualities that make up a favorite for Jacques are completely different than the qualities that make up a favorite for DJ. Jacques' qualities are all about performance and how you carry yourself and how you perform. Whereas DJ, having been here as long as he was, with some of these guys from as young as they were, DJ's qualities would center around, you know, he's a good kid, he's a fine young man, you know, he's fun to be with. You know, DJ's list would have been more about personality. And I think Jacques' list is going to be is much, much more to do with how the guy plays the game.
Right. Yeah, I agree. And you touched on what I was going to, and that I think that Jacques is going to be giving a very brutally honest assessment, a candid one, as he now kind of morphs back into a, not a managerial role, but certainly back into the front office situation as a consultant or whatever the role is going to be. Whereas DJ Smith, I think there would be some level of being protective of his key guys. And he might not report to Steve Staios some of the things that, the players need to work on or guys that need to go. And I agree with that. I think, and there's takes on even guys who are perceived as really great players. Like they've all got warts on them to some degree. Like right now, I'm feeling so good about Brady Tkachuk moving forward and what he's going to be in the playoffs if they ever get there and surround him with the right cast and everything. I feel great about the player, as good as I do about any player. That said, if I was going to be brutally honest and candid with Steve Staios and give my full opinion of Brady Tkachuk, I would make sure I worked into the mix. I'd like to see him back check harder. I'd like to see when they make changes on the fly, I'd like to see him skate a little harder back to the bench. Those would be the kinds of things that maybe get skipped over if you're playing favorites and you feel like you know, you're going to be the coach here for the next 2-3 years. I can work with that. I don't want to get him in trouble with the GM. So I think right now Jacques Martin is going to give the full cool barrel reports on things, a full report. And yeah, so anyway, on the same page on that one.
Yeah.
Moving on. How about a little Sens trivia? We haven't had Sens trivia in a while. I thought this was an interesting Sens trivia question. I won't let you twist in the wind too much with this one because it really is impossible. But it was interesting to me, given that it is tied into one of the stories of the week, and that is the amazing run by the Pittsburgh Penguins. Do you think the Penguins are going to get there? Like they were,
they now control their own fate.
It's crazy. They're a 500 team on March 26th, I think, and they've gone 7-0-3, and now they're in control of their own destiny. It's madness. It's craziness. It's awesome. Because I hate the Penguins, I don't mind if they miss. I want them to get close and taste it and then miss all the same. I hate all the right. Penguins. But also, Sidney Crosby got 1,000 assists. It is a monumental accomplishment to get 1,000 points. Sid got to 1,000 assists. And the Penguins PR team put together the full list of every player who scored a goal for the Pittsburgh Penguins that Sidney Crosby assisted on a goal, at least one. And six of those guys are former Ottawa Senators. You'll be able to amaze your friends at the bar tonight, ladies and gentlemen, if you can come up with all six. We'll give you the answer to all to the six so you can amaze your friends. But I wonder, how many can you name?
Yeah.
Any of them?
Wow. Erik Karlsson.
Well done.
I did, full disclosure, you did give me a heads up about this about 5 minutes before we turned the mics on.
Marian Hossa.
No. You were sitting there watching me, buddy. I got Marian Hossa and Erik Karlsson. I'm pretty confident about those two.
Hossa is, yeah. I thought it was going to be like, you know, 30 goals or something. He had one. Marian Hossa had one goal that Sidney Crosby actually assisted on. And the reality is I didn't realize Hossa was in Pittsburgh for only like 20 something games.
He was
in the playoffs that year.
Yeah. One season.
Not 20 games. Yeah. Not even a full season. So that's why he only had one goal. If he was there for a full season, he would have had more than one goal that was set up by Sidney Crosby. So there's two. Have you got?
There's two. I got Big Game Brass.
Big Game Brass, not on the list.
Wow. Sergei Gonchar.
Sergei Gonchar is definitely right. That's the number one guy.
Yeah, I would
have to go back. I might have to go back and look at Derek Brassard. I'm shocked that he's not there.
Yeah, hey. I had a question mark because I'm not sure if they ever played together there, but Was Sid ever there when Kovalev was in Pittsburgh?
I don't think so. He's not on the list anyway, and I'm not seeing Brassard either.
Wow. How about Ron Hainsey?
Ron Hainsey's another good guess, but he is not on the list.
Wow. Oh, Cody Ceci was in Pittsburgh, right?
He was, but never scored a goal that Sid assisted.
Oh man.
According to the Penguins PR department.
Like, I'm coming up with guys that played for Pittsburgh and Ottawa in his lifetime, in Sidney Carlson's career timeline, or in Sidney Crosby's timeline, and they're not. Because McEachern wasn't there when Crosby was there. Smolinski wasn't there when Crosby was there.
That's old school.
That's all I got.
All right, I'll give you the full lowdown.
I can't believe that. I came up with that.
So you got Eric Carlson, Sergei Gonchar, and Marian Hossa. And then the others are Jarkko Ruutu.
Oh, God. Yeah.
Matt Cullen. And the one I would never have gotten because he had two career goals as a Pittsburgh Penguin. Enforcer Andre Roy. Those were the six guys. Yeah. So you did
the
well.
The other guys were better hockey players. Right?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I would have thought Derek Brassard would have been on there, but I'm looking at the list right now, and he is not. Jeez. Do you know how many goals that Mario Lemieux scored that Sid assisted on?
It'll be a lower number than we think because they were really only played the 1 year together, right?
And again, about the same as Hossa.
Yeah, I'm going to say maybe three or four.
Just one. Just the one.
Just one again. Okay.
Yeah. So he was living with Mario Lemieux, but they didn't make a living. They didn't make a living much together, but certainly what a passing of the torch that was. It's just crazy.
Perfect.
I wonder if and it was like, you know, in both cases when Mario arrived in the mid 80s and then when Sid arrived in the mid 2000s, like the Penguins are starting to spin their wheels. They're having some trouble and they just kept getting breaks from the draft, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then you have Ottawa.
And then you have Ottawa gets no draft luck at all. 2020 was pretty good. Got to say, 2020 was pretty good.
They're still in it. They could still in for the wait a minute. Where are we now? Can we still finish in the bottom 10 and have at least a shot at the first overall pick? We're still in a situation to maybe get the first overall this year.
Yeah, I think right now it's somewhere between they're basically tracking to be somewhere between 5th and 8th. Let me just get you the update on that. Head off to the good friends at tankathon.com, and right now
there you go.
The Sens are in the number 7 spot right now. Perfect. And as I scroll down here and try
they
and
just lose a couple more. What do they got, 2-3 left? They could lose all these games. Maybe they can strengthen their lottery odds, Steve. You never know.
So they're at 7.
Okay.
Here's the stats. 44% chance of 7th, 36% chance of 8th pick. So it's going to be one of those two. It'll be 7th or 8th in all likelihood because that takes up, over 80% chance. Then at 9th pick, they have a 5.6% chance, but they can move up. If they stay where they are right now, they have a 6.5% chance of number 1 overall. The Celebrini draft, 6.7 at 2, and a very long outside shot at 3. That's not even worth talking about.
You didn't watch it, but I did watch the entire day of TSN Trade Center. And during the broadcast, they did do a draft lottery, and the Senators won the draft lottery and moved all the way up to 2nd. They got second place, their second pick in the draft lottery on TSN Trade Center.
I know people like to say things like the Sens are never going to, the NHL will never allow the Ottawa Senators to win number 1 overall. Then explain to me the number of times Edmonton was able to do so well, including the greatest player of his generation in Connor McDavid. That would not happen if the NHL were currying favor with the bigger market teams only.
You are correct, sir.
Moving on.
What else?
Sens attendance. That's new. They've had a big hike this year. And I wonder These are the numbers, by the way. They've averaged 17,785 fans through their 38 home games. They had the two games in Stockholm. That's why that number seems wonky. They had an average of 16,700 and change last year. So a sizable increase of over 1,000. They're going to have a big old crowd with the Habs in town, half of them Hab fans. So that'll be sellout number 19 of the year, and that's up from 15 last season. And the club will move past 700,000 for total attendance. It's the first time that's happened since 2015-2016. The question I have for you is, will we see the attendance continue to trend upward next season or downward?
That is a very good question. This is a team that the last two summers, particularly two summers ago, the summer of Pierre, made some big changes, and we saw a jump in season ticket sales both times. Will the upcoming summer produce enough changes? Will the fact that it's the new group is now in charge from the start of the season, will that be enough to spur on some other folks out there to buy tickets? I believe that the number will be higher next year for one other key reason, is that the team will be better. The walk-up sales, the add-on sales, I think will be higher next season. Think of the games down the stretch at home, particularly early and midweek games with a team that is out of it, whether officially out of it or not. Those numbers will increase. Games like that will draw more fans if the team is in a playoff race next season. And I firmly believe that they will be, at the very least, in a playoff race. So, yeah, I think the numbers will go up next year. What are you thinking?
Yeah, I think it will, but it's all going to depend on what Steve Staios does this summer, because if it's something flat and uninspiring like the trade deadline was, bringing in Boris Kachuk and trading away Tarasenko to the only team that he would be willing to be traded to, if it's a non-inspiring summertime, then I think it takes a step back. I don't expect that to be the case, but never say never. So I think it's all dependent on what Staios is able to accomplish this summer. And I think they're on the same page as you and I have been on for a long time. They have a lot of interesting pieces. They just don't fit together. I mean, that's, if you listen to TSN 1200, Dave Poulin was on a lot in that Pierre Maguire 805 segment. And in the days and the weeks and the months leading up to his hiring as the right-hand man for Steve Staios, he's saying all those same things as well.
Ladies and gentlemen, rev up your engines and get ready for the deal of a lifetime. Jim K. Ford is proud to announce the 2023 Ford F-150 Clearout Sale, the event you've been waiting for. For a limited time only, Jim K. Ford is offering unbeatable discounts, jaw-dropping financing options, and mind-blowing trade-in deals. Don't miss out on the 2023 Ford F-150 Clearout Sale at Jim K. Ford, 1438 Uville Drive in Orleans, or jimkford.com.
At Jim K. Ford Lincoln,
this is Ryan. Ryan would love to start his own podcast as a fun way to create content for all his platforms, to better connect with his customers and build a new audience. But Ryan isn't great with technology, and he has a lot of questions. What's the easiest way to record a high-quality podcast? Does he need to travel to a studio? What equipment will he need? Capital Podcast had all of Ryan's answers. After a free consultation, we took care of everything for him. All Ryan had to worry about was jumping on the mic and starring in his own show. He's recording this week's episode right from his office. His expert guest this week is one of his customers who's in a Chicago hotel room. And Capital Podcast is online with them, making sure the final product is perfect. Easy, convenient, professional. Contact us today and star in your own show with capitalpodcast.ca.
So Jakob Silfverberg called it a career at age 33, his jersey number 33. And I found that kind of interesting, that most guys have to be dragged kicking and screaming from the league. But he's decided he's retired from the NHL come the end of the season. And it immediately brought back old memories of, back to a decade ago, when Daniel Offertson ran screaming from the organization after Eugene Melnyk led or inspired contract offers were lowball, and Offertson was offended by it, and he said, you know what, I'm out of here. He was a UFA that summer, and off he went. And the Sens immediately then maybe it was a deal they were already working on, but they immediately went out and got a guy they thought could do a half-decent Alfie impression, another right winger in Bobby Ryan, and Jakob Silverberg was one of the guys going the other way. What are your memories of those days?
I remember thinking that it was uninspiring. I didn't think the trade was... The acquisition of Bobby Ryan did not impress me as much as maybe it impressed others. I never saw Bobby Ryan as being a big superstar stud in the league. I know he'd had a decent season or two with the Ducks, but he never attained any of those numbers here in Ottawa. He just, I would say that, you know, the trade was probably a wash. The only thing that skewed it in being the Ottawa losing the trade was how much money you ended up having to give to Bobby Ryan. You know, he was coming in hot, and I don't know that he was ever hot when he got here.
Yeah, and it's just the Senators didn't acquire Getzlaff and Perry at the same time. Not to say that he was, you know, they were entirely responsible for what Bobby Ryan accomplished, but he obviously, you know, had a better supporting cast with the Anaheim Ducks. He had four straight 30-goal seasons, and I think that excited a lot of Sens fans, but I think that fell out of favor in Anaheim. And as I've said many times before, when you make a deal like that, you know, this party that goes, oh, yeah, he's got a four times, you have 30-goal season. And I'm like, yeah, but why would Anaheim want to unload him exactly? Why would they want to make that trade exactly? So I kind of found out why, and that his numbers dropped off substantially. We'll always have 2017 because he really was terrific in those playoffs, wasn't he, Bobby Ryan?
True. Yes. He was really good in the playoffs. But I think to answer your question on the trade, I think part of it was that he was coming up for a contract. And I don't know that Anaheim, looking ahead and reading the tea leaves, thought that maybe this is the kind of guy they want to be spending money on for the kind of money that he was going to get and what he did get from Ottawa. Anaheim just didn't see that as a smart financial decision. But he's one of those guys. And you get mesmerized, you read stats, or you only see highlights, and folks, when you're watching the highlights, you're only seeing the good things, right? You watch the highlights every night on TSN, you only see the goals, and you see some guy score, and oh, hey, he's pretty good. Look at this guy's a goal scorer. You don't see the rest of his game unless you watch his games. And then he gets here and you go, man, he's a little slower than I thought he was going to be. You know, he doesn't seem to be all that physically engaged like I thought he might be, or Jesus, doesn't seem to play up to his body type, does he? You know, you see all these things come out at you when he gets here, and you think, wow, what'd they give up for this guy? What are they paying this guy? It's it's one of those things where it's the pro scouting department of the Ottawa Senators may have dropped a ball on that one.
Yeah, and it was no harm, no foul for the most part, because all of the assets, now the Sens wouldn't have chosen, they might not have chosen Nick Ritchie with the first rounder that ended up going to Anaheim. Nick Ritchie, tough guy and everything, but bottom six forward all day long. And then you had Stefan Nason. You weren't sure what you had with him. He was a former first rounder from that year in 2011 when they had three first round picks, and Jakob Silverberg, who was a second rounder. But at the time, he looked like he might be the crown jewel of this thing because we weren't sure what exactly Silverberg would be, but we did know that the season before he was the MVP in both the Swedish Elite League in both the regular season and in the playoffs. And so you're thinking, okay, well, there's maybe a passing of the torch from Daniel Alfredsson, who's about to enter his final season, to a guy that's just completed his first season in the league. And, but no, he was used as bait to bring in Bobby Ryan. And that, did you feel like that was a panic deal that they were basically, cause it happened the same day. You know, it all went down the same day. I'm sure it was like their heads must have been spinning going, oh my God, did we just let the greatest player in franchise history walk and then just made this deal and hope for the best?
Yeah, a deal like that doesn't happen in a matter of an hour, though. So obviously there was they must have been having discussions at some point. Yeah. But a bit of maybe we better do that deal after all. You know, maybe we better go find something after all. We got to replace these goals that Alfie's walking out the door with. Steve, I'd have to try to go back in time and even try to remember who else might have been available or who else got traded within a month or two on either side of that deal where maybe you could have been in on that deal instead of Bobby Ryan. I honestly don't remember. That's for somebody with a better memory than me.
So we're about to say goodbye to the Sens for another year, and Saturday night, as I mentioned, is their home finale. Did the NHL schedule maker do the Sens a favor there by scheduling the Montreal Canadiens for their home finale? I guess, you know, I can't imagine anybody thinking that this was good, because I thought Montreal would be just terrible this year, like really bad. I thought maybe Ottawa would be in the playoffs, but at the same time, it's like, it's the home finale. It's, you know, is Montreal the right choice, knowing that they're going to completely invade the place? There's going to be more than half the crowd will be wearing the red, white, and blue. Would you like to see any other team but Montreal and Toronto at the home finale?
Yes. Like, I get it. You know, it's a season finale, so let's make it a divisional rival. Okay, there's divisional rivals, and then there's geographic rivals. It doesn't have to be Toronto or Montreal. Like, I would have been just as fine. I would have been much better, much happier if it were Detroit or Buffalo. You know, either one of them would have worked out just fine in my mind. Because as you say, I think it's part of the reason why the fan appreciation night is not tomorrow night, right? That's why it's not at the Hab game, because half the fans in the building won't, you know, your season ticket holders, half of them are going to get rid of their damn tickets anyway to give them away to their Hab fan friends. So that's why this season ticket holder or fan appreciation night was last week. But I'm going to be at the game, Steve, and I'm with you. Okay, it's a Hab game, so it'll be a full house. You know, it'll be loud, it'll be exciting, but at the same time, over half the place is cheering for the Habs, and they're going to start singing their silly songs and doing all that crap, and I'm not looking forward to that part of it.
I've been covering the team since day one, and in the early days, I was always, when Toronto and Montreal would come to town and do their thing and dominate the building, I was always of the opinion in the early days that, but you watch, with generations to come, that it'll eventually give way where the Sens become so strong in this town that the Leafs and the Habs won't dominate the building the way they typically do. There's been absolutely no progress in that area when the Sens or the Habs and the Leafs come to town. Is there a solution? Like, I mean, obviously it didn't happen by osmosis. I wonder, is there something? Because you saw Tampa Bay get heavily criticized for banning ticket sales online to anybody who's got the wrong postal code that's not in the Tampa Bay area. Is there any kind of strategy? Because, I mean, Sens fans just absolutely despise going to those games now, it seems.
Yeah. Well, you need look no further historically than Toronto and Buffalo. Like, it hasn't changed there, and Buffalo's been in this league a lot longer than the Leafs, or a lot longer than the Sens. Or you go to a Toronto game in Calgary or Edmonton or Winnipeg or Vancouver, same with the Habs. It's those things there historically, it hasn't changed. It's not going to change here either. And I'm sure every one of those markets, especially Buffalo, have probably tried things, and nothing seems to work. Because you're torn too, right? Like, part of the Senators, well, you know, they're in the business of making money. Let's not forget that. So they need to sell tickets. So are they really in a position where they can afford to be picky and afford to be turning people away when they really need to sell tickets, right? You got to have people in the seats. So can they really get down to that business there of your postal code? But then even your postal code doesn't matter, because there's half of them are probably from Ottawa. It's not like every single one of those Hab fans in the building is coming in from Montreal. You can bet half of them are just second or third or fourth generation Ottawa residents who are Hab fans. So I don't really know what you can do other than, I don't know what you can do. Steve, have you got an idea for this one? You put the question out there. You must have some solution for this.
Yeah, I feel like a jerk for asking, because every time somebody talks about this stuff, it's like, oh, yeah, it's so small town or whatever, but it doesn't seem to be going away on its own. So I don't mind talking about strategies for it. And I certainly wouldn't talk in these terms in the Eugene Melnyk era when he was just enraging fans every time he opened his mouth and the attendance was dipping because of it. I just gave you the attendance numbers. They're pretty good right now. So I think we can, you know, have a healthy conversation about it now. And maybe one of the biggest things that needs to happen is the season ticket holders don't give their tickets away to Hab and Leaf fans. You know, that's
there's one. A good point.
Yeah. SensNationHockey.com is the website. You can also check out the hockey news. Appreciate that. If you do that, THN.com/Ottawa. Greg, enjoy your weekend. Enjoy the Masters.
Masters weekend, baby.
Yeah, yeah. Do you think DeChambeau is going to finish it out as we do this on Friday? He's in good shape right now.
Yeah, looking like it. The mechanical man with the funny clubs and the awkward looking swing and the he's so far so good. He's holding up. I don't know. I'm not a fan, but I'll still watch. As long as Tiger doesn't win, I'm in.
Oh, you're not a Tiger guy. Okay. All right, let's call it quits right there. Enjoy your weekend, ladies and gentlemen, and we shall talk to you in our next episode.
Thanks for being with us on the Jim K. Ford Sens Nation podcast. If you're enjoying the show, please subscribe and review. Share the show with your friends and followers, or become a member on Patreon. Check out our website today at SensNationHockey.com.